welcome to Where to Ski with me, your host, John Morgan. We're at 8,800 feet and heading to Colorado. Grab your skis and let's dive into the world of skiing at Crested Butte. My guest today instructs and guides at Crested Butte. Dave McGuire, known by everyone as Mac, has been skiing, living, and instructing at Crested Butte since he attended Western State College in Gunnison, about 22 miles down the hill. He knows the mountain, knows the area very well. Crested Butte started as a supply town for the coal and silver mines and the ranches in the Gunnison Valley back in the late 1880s. The town is small, historic, and a bit eclectic. Nestles in the heart of the Rocky Mountains, just north of Gunnison, Colorado. Restaurants, watering holes, and shops of all kinds make the town an attractive landing spot for visitors. The ski area boasts an incredible variety of terrain suitable for every level of skier, from beginners to seasoned expert. With over 1,500 acres of skiable terrain, Crested Butte offers a mix of groomed runs, glades, and challenging steeps, ensuring that everyone can find that perfect place to ski. The mountain is renowned among skiers of all levels, but has a reputation for providing some of the most extreme skiing in North America. So let's find out more from Mac. Mac, welcome to Where to Ski. We haven't done one of these podcasts in person yet, so it's a pleasure to meet you face to face. It's been a long time since I skied at the Butte. This area was really small. It's always been very friendly. Has that changed, Mac?
Well, you say small. I'm like, it's not small, but it's not big either.
It's contained. It's like one area. It doesn't spread out over multiple mountains.
It's one mountain, and there's not, you can't ski away from it, really, but there's enough terrain and situational skiing that you can entertain yourself for a long, long time.
Yeah, and for a lot of levels, too.
Yeah.
What brought you to Crested Butte, and how'd you get so hooked on it? You know, you've been here for a while, and you've got a family here.
No, I came back in 79, originally to go to Western State College. Speaking with you about racing and all that, that's why I came. I wanted to make the Western State. Those couple of years that I was there, they happened to have their best team ever, and I couldn't make the team. I was coming off of not really ski racing consistently and skiing a lot because I was living on an island up in Washington, but I got drawn back to Colorado because I was raised here, and went to Western State and started skiing Crested Butte and went, my goodness, what a mountain.
It is. It's a special mountain. And living here is different than just coming to ski it. You know, you live in the town, you raised your kids in the town. It's probably it's an eclectic town, but it's a real town. It's not like some of these really overdeveloped towns. It's
right.
A real town.
No, there's been many marketing slogans over the years that stated that. And they were all right, you know. Last of the great ski towns. We're not Vail or Aspen, things like that. And it's been very true. And I've kind of watched the growth occur and the control of the growth, you know, kind of by itself has happened over these years too. It's been, you know, it's been great because we didn't want it to just blow up and expand and not be Crested Butte anymore, but it's held its heritage and its culture for all these years. So it's been great.
That's cool. It's a good town and it's far enough away from like Denver so that you're not getting the guys that are driving Saturday morning to get up there to go ski. You know, it's a commitment to get here. It's about, 5.5 hour drive to Denver?
Yeah. Summertime, you know, different passes and roads you can take, and that's great. But skiing, it's a commitment.
Yeah, well, and you can fly into Gunnison pretty easy, and that's a half hour away, so it's not a big deal.
Great long airstrip here. You know, I think it might be the third longest strip in the state, so they can land anything here.
Maybe give us and our listeners here an overview of what the area is like. You know, when you drive up to it, it stands on its own. It's a mountain on its own, and it's got basically skiing on almost three sides now.
Yeah, you can get almost all the way around through it. So it's a mountain. You know, it was discovered a long time ago and planned on, and watching the development of it, it's been a long process, but it's got great beginner terrain. You can learn to ski there, and that's kind of why I got into the job. It's also got great intermediate terrain, but not a lot of it. It's kind of like you're pushed as a skier to go, hey, let's get through this blue stuff and start tackling some of the black diamonds and the double blacks, because Crested Butte is, half of its terrain is double black diamond.
especially over on the left side, in the top left side. That's
north face area. And you can go up higher than the lifts are and ski double black terrain up in the middle of the mountain. And you can also come around over on the west side and ski some of the, which I think are the signature runs on Crested Butte.
Do you do much climbing? Well, I mean, going up the lifts and then climbing up above
You have to if you want to ski the great stuff in Crested Butte.
Okay. You know, everyone's heard of Rambo, which is like, I think, one of the most steepest runs in North America.
Yeah.
You reach out, touch it with your elbow, and pull the trigger and hope you make it to the bottom.
Yeah, no, that was kind of a mistake run, but it's there, and people want to ski it all the time, and it's very rarely in condition where you want to ski it.
So it's probably bumpy.
Yeah, there's no cat stuff on any of our double black terrain. It was a sight line cut for a lift possibility. And then they realized they cut this swath down it and people were going to ski that anyway. So they widened it and made it into a run. And it's, you know, you can see it. You can ski an easy blue run and get to the bottom of it and watch and look up at it and go, wow, I'm glad I'm down here, not up there. And then you can watch. You know, people go, why don't they cut those trees off of that run? Because there's a bunch of 6-foot trees all over it now. It's like, that's the only thing holding the snow on it. Otherwise, it would just fall off. And, well, let's see, this will be my 45th year here. And I've seen a lot of new lifts put in and new terrain opened and places that we used to maybe poach or try to get access from ski patrol to go over and check it out has all kind of opened up now. And it's when the conditions are good, you can ski pretty much the entire mountain that you can see up there.
So as an expert, that's the place to go, is up in the left side in the bowls up there.
Yeah. And that, you know, you mentioned hiking or climbing. There's not a lot of that. I mean, you can, to get to these places, it's sidestepping, skating. It's not real, you know, take your skis off and climb unless you're going to go to the peak. And you can climb to our peak on given sunny days and ski off the top of the mountain too, which is a skis off on your shoulder, shoving your boots into little boot holes all the way up. But that's a fun ski. But most people do that hike for the view, not the ski. It's rarely great skiing.
It's not like you're going to do laps doing that either. You know,
no.
That takes time, that takes commitment and equipment and out-of-bounds equipment, which is different than what normal skiers carry most every day.
Yeah, but, you know, you don't really need any other special equipment. You can, like I said, put your skis on your shoulder and hike up, carrying straps. You see all that stuff, but you don't need it. Nothing that extensive.
Yeah, skiing that really steep stuff is quite amazing. And sometimes it's like one and done in a day. You get that one run, and that's it.
Yeah.
I've had it. It was a great run. I'm not doing it again. What's it like as an intermediate? You teach a lot. So you said the intermediate's a little bit limited, but where do you find that? Where would somebody who's an intermediate go?
Well, probably the most popular part of our mountain is called Paradise. And it's got a high-speed quad chair on it, restaurant at the base of it. You know, it's a good multi-pitched, stair-steppy type terrain. And it services the East River Lift, which is on the east side. Great long cruising terrain. Once you kind of skied all that up and the crowd start catching these areas and moving over to that east side, that's when it's time to venture back around and start heading up to the steeper stuff, in which case you can still find there's intermediate skiing in these double black areas. And that's what I love being able to do, is take somebody who's, you know, maybe only skied one or two black runs in their life, and we can go up and take a T-bar up and explore some of this terrain that only the experts are skiing in, but yet we're not really skiing anything steeper than a blue pitch.
Nothing out of their capability, but
right.
You get to, and that's where I was going to get to, is it helped to take a guide or an instructor to be able to find some of these?
You
got to
know that, yeah. So that's the situation that's now existing with more and more people coming up here. They're just going out. People are coming up and going, oh, well, I've skied double blacks. The saying now at Crested Butte is, well, you haven't skied these double blacks.
Yeah, there's blacks and there's blacks. There's double blacks and there's double blacks. And when you're talking double blacks here, you're talking...
Yeah, you can get into places where...
stuff.
Yeah, there's no fences, no ropes, and you're on top of a cliff band, you know, and it's like you had to have skied by a sign somewhere that said cliff area, but you can get caught in some bad areas, and that happens quite often in our terrain, where patrol has to come and rope people up and out just because they don't know. So you can go ride a T-bar and follow some locals and go, oh, they know where they're going, but you don't know where you're going. So you can get in trouble doing that. Best thing, we have something in the ski school called North Face Guide or Extreme Terrain Clinics. And we'll take people up into those situations and show them the terrain.
That's fabulous. And, you know, after a few runs with something or a half day with something like that, then at least you've got a handle on where you can and can't ski. So you could go up and do some on your own
right.
or with a small group or something like that.
Right.
I assume with terrain like that, avalanche is always a consideration. You know, you get snow down here, big snow.
Yeah, we can. And it is a Class A avalanche ski area. And so there's bombs going off all the time. I think last year was one of the biggest bombing years I'd ever encountered. And they keep it well controlled. We haven't had an inbounds avalanche in decades.
Yeah, and once they get the program of the mountain, do they ever shut the mountain down so they can blow it out?
Well, that's the problem with a lot of big snow days is that a lot of this stuff, that terrain will not open with the public opening of the rest of the lifts. So it tends to be you go up, you ski down past these T-bars that we have, and you keep watching. And if they're not moving yet, you keep making laps. And then eventually you'll see the lift line start to form. Somebody's got the word out. And then the upper terrain will start to open. And so there is a lot of times a delay.
And word gets out, and all of a sudden you see everyone flock to one side of the... All the top skiers flock to one side of the hill, and they're gone.
Right, and they're in a lift line, and once that T-bar starts getting people up and about, then the mountain spreads out pretty well. But
you talked a little bit about how good this was for beginners. The ski school is really built for beginners. Most ski schools are, to be able to get them started, get going. What's the mountain like for beginners? Do they have fun on it? Is it down at the bottom? Is it...
Right now, the beginning area is down near the bottom, and that's maybe limiting, in my sense, to help skiers learn the skills, and then a beginner lift near the base called Peachtree that can get you moving and get around. But I think our beginner terrain has not yet been tapped, and I'm hoping to get Vail on board with them. I've told maybe the last three owners that we've had here that the lift we need is a gondola out of our base up to a place called Painter Boy, which will give you one of the best views you'll ever get in a ski area, because it's kind of a ridge up to the side of the mountain on the east side, and you get to the top of that and you're looking right back up at what the trail map would show you. You're looking at the mountain from a beautiful deck
and
snack
it's easy,
area,
and it's easy skiing, and there's cool restaurants, things like that there, so that works pretty well.
Right.
And as a note, when you say Vail bought Crestview about 5 years ago, which
right.
is why it's part of Vail Corp and
exactly.
part of the EPIC program.
And so that terrain, that ridge off to the side, has greens and blue terrain, and it's a great place. When it does get busy, you know, most of the locals will head over to those areas and ski there and avoid the lift lines. Shorter runs, good new snow, but slower lifts.
And good grooming.
Good grooming. Where it's needed. Yeah, so the greens and most blues in that area are groomed out, but you can find pockets of freshies anywhere you go.
In terms of coming to visit, what would be the best month to visit, you think? January, February, March? Something like that?
Well, that really depends on your ability, you know, and we open the day before Thanksgiving every year. Great time to be there. Weather can be great, or maybe winter, you know, and it's, you never know, but if you're fine with green runs, early season's awesome. But I typically tell most of my clientele and the people that are asking that same question, I always tell them, you know, the end of January and the first part of February is when you can come here and know that you're probably going to have all the terrain open. So you have all the options available to you. You know, some people come here way early Christmas time and none of the steep terrain's open. Just hadn't gotten the snow yet. Yeah, so if you want to have access to all the terrain, you really have to wait till about midwinter.
Staying in Crested Butte, Crested Butte's interesting because the mountain has got its own little community, and about a mile and a half away is the town of Crested Butte.
Mm-hmm.
The town of Crested Butte is awesome because it's that old mining community feel. It's got the buildings that are, it's eclectic. It's got all the multicolored buildings on Main Street there and everything else.
Yeah.
And you go up to the bottom of the mountain a mile and a half away, and it's all new. A lot of it's been built since when I was skiing here years ago.
Right.
Talk to me about staying. You know, how do you recommend with some of your guests, they come up here and stay? Do they stay on the mountain and go into town, or stay in town and go to the mountain? Or?
Yeah, that's the challenge. And I think it comes down to, you know, coming here and experiencing this place and going, hey, next time let's stay downtown. Next time let's do this, that, whatever it is. But if you're up on the mountain, the shuttle service is awesome. You can get from pretty much any condo, bed and breakfast, short-term rental, whatever. You can get to the base area pretty quick. But downtown, a little more charm down there, the historic district. Most of the food service and night life is happening downtown. But in that same sense, you have a shuttle from the mountain to the town every 15 minutes. So it's really easy to get from mountain to town, town to mountain, without having to drive a car.
And that's nice, especially on mountain roads in the winter, if you're not used to driving on ice and snow and whatever else, and you can just have a couple of drinks at dinner and not worry about driving back.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's some good restaurants, too. There's, I ate up there yesterday, the Stash.
Secret Stash.
Secret Stash Pizza.
World renowned.
It was great pizza. I've eaten there a couple times. It's awesome. Are there other places you'd recommend for some of the people?
You know, I was, that was such an easy thing to do before the pandemic. And then we've lost a few great places since then. But downtown, as you mentioned, the Secret Stash, the gal who owns that, Kylina, she also owns a place called Bones. That's a Mexican restaurant. And if you know the decor in Secret Stash, you'll notice the same thing at Bones. It's very outlandish, exciting, creative, great place. But there's also some very long-time great restaurants still in existence on our main drag. Elk Avenue Prime, the Wooden Nickel. Wooden Nickel's been around as long as I've been here. Steakhouses. Great one, Marchitelli's Gourmet Noodle is an Italian place.
Really?
It's like a half a block back on an alley, and like some of our restaurants are tucked into alleys, and you got to know where they're at. But really good food. Soup's On is another great place in an alley, that like two seatings in an old farmhouse.
So you got to get, make a reservation.
And, yep.
But it's well worth it, it sounds like.
Yeah, like Soup's On's a 5-course. You're going to pay $200, just flat rate. And pairings and all kinds of great meals come out of there.
Awesome.
Yeah. And, most people that come in the wintertime, they know some of these places and make the reservations. Others will just show up and walk around and drop in wherever they can, make a reservation for the next day if they see some place they want, and you can get fed well here.
Is there much of an après scene here?
Again, that depends on what kind of après you want, but yeah. So downtown, you can hit what's called the Barmuda train. It's basically three bars that have been around a long time. Kachivers, which is on the north end of, or the west side of Elk Avenue, kind of up the hill. That's an 1800s saloon and gaming hall from years ago. Most people end up there. Check it out. You've got all kinds of gaming stuff on the walls and a big buffalo over the front door to greet you. And so people will start there, and that's right across the street from a bus stop. Then they'll walk downtown. On either side of the street, you can hit the Talk of the Town, which is another great locals bar. Two floors, so they have the Sky Bar above. And then across the street, the third one, I don't go there very often, but it's got a good staircase to get you up into it. It's right above the post office. Those are the three main bars, but you can also hit all the bars and the restaurants. And
it sounds like you sort of do a Main Street slalom back and forth a few times.
It's easy. It's fun.
And the bus is there to take you back to the mountain when you're done.
Yep.
What's your philosophy on skiing, about your own skiing and instruction? And a lot of people have got very definitive views on how they see skiing and how they enjoy skiing and how they try and pass that on to other people.
And me being in the instruction world, I've had an opportunity to listen to and hear all these different theories and philosophies. And so that's a great question from you. I grew up a racer, like you said you had, and I kind of knew what top skiing was all about. And high-end skiing, in my thought process, is simply, how well can you bend the ski? And yet I think most people, when they come here and learn to ski, or anywhere they go to learn to ski, they're not thinking of bending the ski, they're thinking of turning the ski. And I think that's the big step that differentiates what skiing's all about. I know what it takes to accommodate and adjust and adapt to different people's needs and mentalities and aggressiveness. And so it's very easy to teach and get people going, but I want them to be able to, if they're going to stay on this mountain for any length of time, I want them to be able to know what bending the ski is all about. When you start getting to that point, you realize that's where the consistency is in skiing. And then, you know, if you've learned to turn the ski before bending it, which most people do, you've got the skills there to incorporate it into the steeper terrain. But what you end up seeing all around the mountain is most people are turning the skis down in the terrain where you really don't need to be turning the skis. All you're doing is braking and creating more effort versus, can I bend the ski and go with it and maintain my speed by shaping my turns differently instead of braking and working harder to get going again. And so I've got a, I'm pretty aggressive at pushing people through the turning to bending ability. And that's usually when I hear the great statements from people like, well, different ball game, whole different sport. I like this now, is when people start realizing that, you know, the design and the technology that's come around these last few years has really changed everything. They've made skiing so much easier. Yeah, and I have been, as an instructor, I try to simplify skiing, and we typically, you know, try to keep it simple in the sense of there's only three skills in skiing. And people, I think there's a lot more involved. And skiing is that, just that. It's skills or fundamentals. Our great national staff has created a new system that says there's five fundamentals now instead of three skills. And that has been great for an instructor. An instructor now learns that the three skills, you know what they would be, twisting or turning the feet and legs, tipping or untipping the skis and boots, and pressure control skills. And pressure is one that people don't really want to, it's not as sexy and jazzy and doesn't give you as much feedback, but that's really the key to skiing right now is the pressuring skills. And so that's what got broken down into three different fundamentals. You're pressuring skis, you're either going, you know, forward and aft adjustments. Where do you want to be? Do you want to be in the middle of your ski, or do you want to be forward or back in the back seat? So that's a pretty simple one that most people kind of figure out pretty quick. Otherwise, they fry their legs. But foot-to-foot pressure. Press on one ski more than another. What happens to the other one? And that's really the big step in moving into bending the ski is can you work on your pressure, foot-to-foot pressure skills and tipping and edging the skis? And then you start realizing, this is how this works. Once they start figuring it out, then things start happening a little faster on the slope. But that's where the next problem comes in. And I'm right now trying to create the sixth fundamental. And I've determined there's a need for it because I have to talk about it. And I talk about the sixth fundamental more than any other fundamental, which is kind of odd. The sixth one is vision. Vision, think about that. If you're turning your skis, you want to be looking down close to where you're at so that you don't turn into a chunk or a pile or a bump, or because then that will stop your ski. But if you're pressing down on an edge ski on one side and that ski's taking off and going somewhere, you need to be looking further ahead. And that's the big challenge, is getting people to change where they're looking. In like a lot like driving. Most of your best drivers are looking further and further down the road than most others.
Anticipation, it's key.
Yeah, knowing where you're going, what's coming up. I mean, you can drive from here where we're at to CB and never hit your brakes, and yet you're watching all these other people do that because they're not paying attention to the big picture.
Anticipation.
Yeah, anticipate. Let off on the gas. You don't have to use your brakes. Get going again. And that's what, you know, how much do you want to bend the ski? You bend it a lot, it's going to bring you across the hill and slow you down. You stop bending it, it's going to take you where it was pointed and keep you moving in the direction you're going. So you need to know.
And go faster.
Faster. And yet it's a comfortable speed.
What's your own favorite day? No lessons. You get to choose where you ski. What's your own favorite day on this mountain?
My favorite day, it's usually sometime in mid-February when the front side of the mountain, what we call the west side, is open. You can ride our Silver Queen high-speed lift up to the top. Don't have to go and get in a T-bar lift line. You just duck around, cut under the top of the lift, and head out onto the west side on a traverse. And you can ski, which I mentioned earlier, is kind of our namesake trails on our mountain, which are right under the peak of the mountain. You're looking up at the peak going, nobody skis there. Nobody should ski there. And it's like, that's the place to go. And these are like 1,500 to 2,000 foot long chutes, couloirs, that are just phenomenal. Not as steep as a lot of the stuff on the north face side of the mountain, but challenging in the sense that they're not very wide. The Banana, which is my favorite run on the mountain, is the main chute under the peak of our mountain. And it's maybe 20 feet wide most of the way down.
Rocks on the side?
Just banks.
Banks.
I mean, last year, the banks were so good and covered with snow that it was just banks. So you can traverse off into the trees, drop down off the bank, catch four or five turns, be right back in the chute again. And it's just so, there's so much challenge and individuality that you can put into these runs. Or you can go right down the gut. But, you know, my favorite run is to catch 5 inches of new snow right down the Banana and try to make it all the way down nonstop without traversing. So, yeah. And the best view on the mountain, too, is right there. You're at the top of the Banana. You can look down into the historic town. You can also look right down that chute and go, I've got a long ways to go, making short turns, and back to the base area.
How do our listeners find you? If they want to take a few runs with you and maybe get you to show them some of the east side or show them the Banana, how do they find you? Through the ski school?
Right. Like I said, I've been here a long time, so just about every minute of my day is recorded somewhere. There's demand, and I do like to get out when I can, between lessons or whatever, ski with a local that I've been talking to for months or years and go, hey, I can make a run with you, let's go. I'm with the ski school up here, and if you go in anywhere and to sign up or check in on that, you just ask for Mac.
Well, Mac, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about skiing here at Crested Butte. You might see Mac anywhere on the mountain. You might see him on the Banana. And if so, don't bug him until he gets to the bottom.
I'm always available.
But if you want to contact him, there you go. The ski school is the right place to reach out. If you like our podcasts, please share them and listen to our perspectives on other areas like San Anton, Palisades, Tahoe, Jackson Hole, Sugar Bush, Portillo, Sun Valley, the Dolomites, and others. Thanks for joining, and thanks to the Grits for the music. Feeling, she feeling, we